So the talk tonight is on aging, and the title I have for it is The Heart of Aging. The Heart of Aging. And so just one day before we came on retreat, I had a birthday, and there wasn't any great celebration with blowing out of candles or making wishes. It was more like, as Molly clarified, I have 1 year less to live. Thanks for that. No, really, actually. And my brother posted some photos of the two of us as wee little children on Facebook. And, of course, I recognize the photo from our old family albums, and but, you know, I clicked on it and zoomed in and looked for a while at that face. And I really just over and over was just, who is that? Who is that? There's really no recognition of that being me. Nothing in that face, like no, it just was, could have been any adorable, sweet child. Yes, the stories begin. And, so I'll come back to this. And another Facebook thing happened. This is the Dharma of Facebook tonight. And a friend posted a birthday wish, as is the norm. But he's an actor and a poet living in New York City, so it wasn't your usual Facebook happy birthday post. But I thought it fit quite perfectly with the theme and my where I thought it fit. So this is his message. Is it true? Did you really have a birthday? I didn't think you had those things, birthdays, I mean. I always got the impression you were timeless, caught in the infinite vortex of blissful sunsets and divine manifestations of joy-filled adventures, dancing through fields of sunshine and stargazing wonder, eyes pure and open, embracing the star of eternal grace. But here's the punchline. And then he said, I think all that is true, and happy birthday too. Or it could have been phrased, I think all that is true, and you have 1 less year to live. So this and place, I think is juicy. I think this is this place of eternal grace and wonder, of sweetness, of heart presence, of wisdom. With eyes and heart wide open to the eternal grace of sitting right here, right in the center of this aging body. And the Buddha didn't suggest that we dwell in this infinite vortex of blissful sunsets, etc., but right here, in the center of it. Sit right here. Stand right here. Walk here. Breathe here. In this embodied coming and going. In this life, living itself. And so this is our 4th full day of retreat. Maybe you're not counting. But maybe you are. And so you might be noticing the changing conditions of these aging bodies, you know, we bring in more blankets from the bedroom and move back and to the chairs, or, you know, so it can't be denied. We feel this body aging. This is it. It's not a concept. We can feel it. Sometimes we can see it too. Sometimes this seeing of bodies aging happens suddenly. We walk past not so much a mirror, because we know what to expect there, but you know, a window that's dark, and you aren't the one at the front door is good for that. If you walk up to it, who the hell is that? Oh, sorry. yeah, you know, there's sometimes that we're caught. Who is that? Whoa. My mother? No, it's me. When did that happen? Or it might be a more consistent or persistent seeing, or even obsessive. You know, I've heard of some people that daily scrutinize their head and pull out gray hairs, you know, when they're first starting. At a certain point, you give up. But, you know, that kind of obsessive scrutinizing. Yeah, good luck. I do this with my faith. When did it decide to live down here? What is this sliding? Or maybe it's when we find ourselves doing an activity that we used to be so easeful and joyful when we were younger. Yeah, camping, that's a good one. The hips just can't do it anymore. Yoga, not the same. I'll sign up for chair yoga this year. Or running, lifting, gardening. You know, we may feel it in that way. These things that used to be so sweet and joyful and easeful, not so much, and changing. There's a Buddhist teacher and a comic, his name's Wes Nisker, and he says, "I didn't understand aging until I started doing it more often." I think I'm getting it. Of course, it's not just this body, this mind ages. And noticing this can also be sudden or gradual or obsessive. Obsessive, like every time we forget something, we think, oh, it's happening. I'm becoming just like, you know, insert name, whoever we know that has lost their memory. And do we remember all think of all the times we remember something? Not so much, but forgetting, we're like, oh, it's happening. Here it comes. Oh, this is a lovely little poem by Roxanne, I think it's Lanier, called Arrival. It's so good. I come to old age as to an unfamiliar land, foreign in its ways, inhospitable to its guests. I find I have packed the wrong things, worn the wrong outfit, studied a language no longer spoken. The time of my arrival, the exact entry point, are mysteries to me. There are some who look settled here, and that is the strangest thing of all. I want to ask, but I think I know, are they not inside as surprised and unprepared as me? So this is where we begin, with this body, this mind, as it ages. And, of course, we sort of know. Yes, I know that. But we're also a little surprised, a little unprepared. We know we're subject to aging, sickness, and death. And we know we've been aging since we've been born. We know we're aging breath by breath. But it's this kind of knowing most of the time. And as we're settling on retreat, we're seeing the different layers of knowing, the embodied knowing. How wonderful for us that the Buddha was a human like us and not a god. This is great. He too was subject to aging, illness, and death. And yet, the Buddha came to know peace with the way things are. So this is also possible for us. Dukkha and the ending of dukkha is what he taught. There's a well-known Zen teacher, Suzuki Roshi, who was asked a question during a question and answer period. Why do we meditate? And as it's told, I wasn't there. He, that winter, had been quite ill, and a few months later was still in the effects of this, and wheezing and coughing and quite unwell still, and aging. And he was still physically unwell, but he reportedly radiated contentment and peace. And so, in answer to this question, why do we meditate, he said, so you can enjoy your old age. He was enjoying his old age, irregardless of maybe even because of what was happening and his presence with it. So we hear these experiences of the teachers in our lives, whether the Buddha or our Dharma teachers or friends and family that are experiencing this grace with aging. And we want what they're having. I'll have what she's having. We too wish for some ease, some presence, some contentment with these changing conditions. And as we're aging, they, for many of us, kind of become exponential. Norman shared the Buddha's definition of aging: brokenness of teeth, grayness of hair, wrinkling of skin, decline of life, weakening of faculties. Did you hear that the other night and think, well, I'm not that bad? I'm not that bad. But then I was imagining, well, in the time of the Buddha, some 2,600 years ago, I believe is one of the estimations, and thinking about, you know, what the modern dental hygiene we have, and dentists, and whitening, and caps, and fillings, and straightening, and everything. And if we didn't have all that, maybe our teeth would, maybe we would be a little more aware of this aging, right? Maybe we wouldn't, wouldn't be so easy to deceive ourselves. And Norman was mentioning also that it's relative, that there's some 30-year-olds that, you know, maybe look more aged, more like a 50-year-old, or some 7-year-olds that look like 50-year-olds, whatever. But to varying degrees, it's still inevitable, to varying degrees. Whether or not the changes are dramatic or subtle, they're there. That guy, Wes Misker, was reporting on a biologist who said to him, as we age, our hard parts get softer and our soft parts get harder. Yeah. Don't think about it too much. Yeah. But really, everything starts dropping, sagging, draping, softening, easing to the ground. Yeah? I think this is a clue. The body's telling us something. Get grounded. Right? Get grounded. The only thing that moves up are hot flashes. So the body is our ally. It's telling us, slow down. Drop down. Get grounded in this present moment. Pay attention to me, the body's saying. Maybe the heart is saying, pay attention. It stops being so rhythmical that you don't notice it. Pay attention. And maybe the body's also telling us to turn our attention inward. Huh? Our eyesight, our hearing. Yeah, listen in. Turn some attention inward. The sense doors. Start to shift, change. In his book, A Year to Live, Stephen Levine says, aging teaches us to follow our life force inward. Aging teaches us to follow our life force inward. So this body, are we treating our body like an ally or like an enemy? Like a foe, an adversary. Yeah, we're trying to lift everything back up. Really, lotions and surgeries, and mousse and undergarments and inversion machines and, lots of headstands if we're yogis, whatever. Trying to get everything back up there. And it's not just the outer form, it's the inner body, the skeleton is, and the organs. You know, like Molly was talking about, we have this outer skin, but it's happening inside as well. And, of course, I'm not suggesting that we don't care for this body. Yeah, keep this body strong and nurture this body. This vehicle, but also respect its natural cycles. Middle path. Not to worship the body, not to reject it. And the Buddha lived both of these extremes. As Molly shared last night, he was born into this life of luxury. We might imagine some lavishing worshipping of the body, lovely bathing and lotions and who knows what kind of masseuses they had there, I don't know. But that kind of luxury worshipping protection of the body. And then after he left home and started on his path, he studied with several masters of various traditions and at one point took up very extreme aesthetic practices that reject the body as a way to transcend the body. You can still see the sadhus in India practicing this way that, wow, they do some wild things. And So having nearly starved to death, the Buddha then came to the middle path. And he says, monks, atas, students, these two extremes ought not to be practiced by one who has gone forth from the household life. What are the two? There is addiction to indulgence of sense pleasures, which is low, coarse, the way of ordinary people, unworthy and unprofitable. And there is addiction to self-mortification, which is painful, unworthy, and unprofitable. So back to this confusion, this angst that we may be experiencing around aging. The pain, the dukkha, comes from the resistance, from the clinging. Remember, it's not what is happening that's the problem, it's our relationship to it. After my first Vipassana retreat, one of the changes that arose for me was a loosening of the ties that were binding me to coloring my hair. At some point along the way, I don't know where, it stopped being about youthful exploration of fun colors and, ooh, they're redhead, or, you know, blue-black, oh, let's see, and just having fun. And at some point it became about covering the gray. This is not to say there's anything wrong with coloring your hair. Please color your hair if you want to color your hair. But for me, I stopped because I saw the root, literally and figuratively, of the suffering. I was already aware of the expense every 6 weeks or something, the angst about the roots. Being a yoga teacher, I'd be like, oh, you know, not like put my head down, oh, I'm gonna shoot. And the chemicals, the, you know, so I was aware already of that layer of dukkha, but willing to overlook that. But then awareness arose of the dukkha, the real issue that's underneath all of that, all of this, which was I was trying to be something I was not, trying to look younger, wanting to be seen in a certain way, separation from what is loved is dukkha. Yeah, I loved that idea of myself. And it may seem trivial, it's just hair color, you know, but in fact it wasn't easy. It was a real letting go of a story of myself and how I want others to see me. And it did change the way that I was perceived in the world. There's an invisibility that happens. I was called ma'am. And I was asked if I wanted the senior's discount at Shoppers Drug Mart. Oh, no! You see, there's still some denial here. When I was asked to speak on this subject of aging, I did a little informal survey. I teach a fair number of seniors and middle-aged people. Middle-aged, isn't that an interesting term? It presumes there's, you know, some future trajectory. But anyways, so I asked some people just casually, so what do you think about aging? What do you think about aging? And some people immediately say it sucks. And some people immediately say it's great. Some people suffer greatly. And some seem to be at peace. Even happy. Yeah, you know, are they just in denial? No. So I found this difference really interesting. What's going on here? And there wasn't a correlation between the people that said it sucks, that they were, you know, having a harder time, or they were older, or they had more health issues, or mobility issues. That wasn't the factor. But it's kind of like this difference between the definitions, dictionary definitions of old and of aging. Old, of long standing, worn, no longer in use, grayish or dusty color. Of or relating to the final stage in an erosion cycle. But the definition of aging, to show the effects or the characteristics of increasing age. Yeah. To acquire a desirable quality as mellowness or ripeness. Oh, get this. By standing undisturbed for some time. Oh, there it is. Right? This is our practice. Isn't it? Yeah, to stand undisturbed for some time. I like that. To bring to a state fit for use or maturity. So it's this relationship to it. There's the difference there, and we've heard this. Have you heard this a few times this week on retreat? How many times have you heard it's the relationship to it? Yeah. Molly spoke about this last night when teaching about illness. When the Buddha said, when touched with a feeling of pain, the uninstructed, run-of-the-mill person sorrows, grieves, and laments, beats his breast, becomes distraught. So he feels two pains, physical and mental, just as if they were to shoot a man with an arrow and right afterwards were to shoot him with another one, so that he would feel the pain of two arrows. So, as we know, our ideas about aging don't arise in a vacuum. It's conditioned arising. And, you know, one quick cursory glance at any department store magazine rack, and these are actual quotes from covers, the age issue. Look younger now. Best bets from the experts. Sharon Stone, 56 and hotter than ever. Age-proof your body. Can that be done? And a book, Younger Next Year for Women, Live Strong, Fit, and Sexy Until You're 80 and Beyond. They have a version of this book for men, too, so they do. I'm not making it up. Yeah. Oh, 80. Don't we get it to rest? Yeah, so don't worry about being wise, compassionate, free from dukkha. Just make sure you stay sexy. So what roles have we taken up as our aging identity? Norman spoke about the five aggregates that comprise this being. These five aggregates that we so easily confuse and identify as me and mine. How this process, this form, this body with these sense stores makes contact with with all the objects around us, all the dharmas. And quickly, so quickly comes Vedana, which we've been practicing some awareness of today, pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. And bundled together, happening so quickly, come the perceptions and the mental formations, the perception that that's there and I'm here. And these mental formations, I want to spend a little bit more time on this aspect tonight. It's like that picture my brother posted of me for my birthday. On the one level, I don't really identify with that girl in the picture, that feeling of who is that. But on the other hand, I accept that that is me, because I recognize that adorable way my mom would dress me when she could, and I recognize that's my brother, and that's the house we lived in. And, you know, there's these recognizing. And which is a function of memory. Recognizing is defined as something someone previously known, identify from knowledge of appearance or characteristics, and then this, to perceive as existing or true. So this little picture, this little memory, becomes a little pearl, or it may be a lump of coal, depending on what kind of memories we're having, right? And you could imagine this line stretching out like my arm, and down there at the fingertips is the story of my beginning, my birth, right? And so I thread this little pearl on there, and all the other photos in all the family albums and all the other images in my mind, thread them on, and all the stories that have been told and retold, all the memories are all threaded on, and this becomes me. And of course, there's also this horizontal line stretching in the other direction, and down there at that end is the story of my end, my death. And on there, I imagine threading on all my hopes, my wishes, my imaginings, future projections. And again, these might be glistening gems or lumps of coal, depending on what ideas we have about aging. And so this question arises again, what identity have I taken up as this aging being? What little pearl of me-ness will represent this aging being? Here's one that came up for me that I think this is pretty common, especially in Buddhist circles. See, an identity of me as a person that's going to die well. Yeah, if I meditate enough, if I get peaceful enough, I'm going to be that person that dies well. Well, maybe not. It may not be in my control, right? I can't, all these factors, all these conditions. Do we equate physical health with spiritual health? Do we feel like we're not good meditators if we have pain? Not an enlightened teacher if they have cancer? This happens. This thinking happens. So this doesn't mean I'm not going to continue with this living dharma and this intention for peace, but just to notice, is it being taken up as an identity, an identity of me aging? Yeah. So what else is there for us? You know, these ideas, the still sexy 60-year-old, the still running half marathon 70-year-old, the ultra cool adventurous grandpa, the bereft and the lonely, the gentle and meek, educated and wise, jolly and amiable, important and ultra busy. Yeah, And please understand that none of these characteristics or activities are wrong. It's just an exploration to see if there's any stickiness, any clinging, any aversion. Another one that showed up for me when I was starting to loosen some of my attachment to this image of myself as a strong, sexy, mid-50s woman, and very quickly swept in another identity. And I thought, oh, well, maybe I'll just start moving towards embracing the powerful, wise crone. I'm not kidding. This happened. Yeah, so take a look. See what's happening. Yeah, and I may be all of those things or not, but to see the taking up is liberating. So then this leaves us sitting here in the center, in the heart of aging. The Dharma teacher Ken Jones said this. Oh, it's good. Listen. If we are to make an art of growing old and dying, we need a practice, a way of cultivation, not as a part-time hobby, but with all our heart, all the time. In the right here, the right now, and I'm sure you've had these moments this week of this embodiment. I've seen the slowing down. I've seen this practice, this cultivation of metta. Yeah, just breathing happening. Have you noticed walking at some point? Is walking just happening? Just standing. Just this arising and passing. No comparing, no projecting, just presence, life living itself. And what shows then? What's showing then? Stephen Levine says, there is an unchanging spaciousness in which all our changes float. How could we have overlooked the obvious so completely? From the moment that we became aware that we were aware, whether at the breast or in the womb or the day before yesterday, there has been a single constant, no matter what else was happening. There has been a consistent sense of simply being. Not being this or that, but the thusness into which our treasured this and that's cannot be prevented from disappearing. In fact, this underlying sense of being is as present as we are and does not change from birth to death. It is the constant hum of being in our ever-changing cells. When we look directly at this sense of suchness, when we enter it, when we sit quietly within it, we discover that it is endless. So we watch the leaning into story of past and future self. We sit, stand, eat, breathe, and walk, and recline right in the middle of it all. We're not separate from this horizontal storyline, but we're also not in it. So we'll end with an excerpt from this poem by May Sarton, "Now I Become Myself." It's taken time, many years and places. I've been dissolved and shaken, worn other people's faces, run madly, as if time were there, terribly old, crying a warning, hurry, you will be dead before, what? Before you reach the morning? Or the end of the poem is clear? Or love safe in the walled city? Now to stand still, be here, feel my own weight and density. Oh, in this single hour, I live all of myself and do not move. I, the pursued who madly ran, stand still. Stand still.